Get a little closer to the audience. First time I ever appeared for an audience was when I was in college. I happened to introduce a speaker to 2,000 Aggies. I can remember the frightening time that was, and it's interesting this evening to have a little bit of that flutter in my tummy that I had at that point in time. Tonight we're going to talk about Jesus the Great I Am. I started thinking about this topic about 3 months ago. Off and on, I have been teaching the high school class, and I was looking around for a subject that could develop into a set of lessons. And I ran across a book and a bunch of articles on this particular topic. And so when Shan asked me to talk tonight, I thought, well, I'll just hit the highlights, and we will have a few minutes here to talk about the Great I Am. Another thing that I will talk about is interesting to me. I did not appreciate the hardness that Jesus developed during his ministry. He was much tougher from the middle of his ministry towards the end, till the very end. And as I was reading through John, I read back, and just the things that he was doing, the discussions he was having, attracted a great deal of controversy. And so we really want to ask, who is this Jesus? And that's the question that the Jews were asking at that point in time. He was appealing to the people in a big way. And now he's getting ready to claim his deity. He's going to tell them that he's the God here on earth, manifested by God in the flesh. This would cause great conflict between not the people, but the leaders of the Jews and Jesus. And everywhere he went, there was plotting going on behind the scenes. And it really started right here in this first part of the lesson. And I said, you really think about the people at that point in time, the questions that were being asked were very simple. Is this the one who was prophesied about in the Old Testament? Is he the Jesus that was talked about? We know today, looking back and reading, there was at least 50 very explicit discussions about the Christ, the Messiah, to come. And it started in Genesis, the third chapter, as we all know. At the time after the man and the woman there, Adam and Eve, had been tempted and fell, and he's talking to the serpent, and I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed, and he shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel. That's out of the 15th verse of Genesis, third chapter. And in the 45th Psalm, many different prophecies about Jesus. Your throne, O God, is forever and ever. And skipping down, therefore God, your God, has anointed you. And we know that the other prophecies were that Christ Jesus, the Messiah, would be rejected by his own people. The covenant was established with Abraham and continued on with Moses going up on Mount Sinai and getting the commandments. That commandments and that covenant would be at the very least expanded, and the people would reject him. And that was a very common knowledge if you read the scriptures from that old time. He'd be betrayed. The closest one of his 12 would betray him. He'd be silent before his accusers. Christ was never silent before he went before Pilate and before he went before his accusers. He was very verbal and very talkative and would answer the questions and defeat them in almost everything he said. And of course, the prediction that we live to rely on today so much is he was going to be resurrected from the dead, killed, buried, and resurrected. So the real question is he the Savior? That's what was going on at that point in time. The Jews were expecting a Messiah. They refused to recognize Jesus. And the real question, is he the God? Is he God singular? And you look back, and I was reading and trying to figure out in my own mind as how that would be announced to them. And in Exodus 3:14, I have thought a lot about the God saying, I am. And when I started studying this lesson, I started thinking, you know, did it come over to Jesus because he was God on earth? And if we look in Exodus, Jesus and God said to Moses, I am whom I am. And he said, thus you shall say to the children of Israel, and this is where Moses was trying to back out of being the leader. He says, I am has sent me to you. He said, be sure and tell them that. In the 15th chapter of Genesis, also when God was talking to Abram about moving, leaving his family, leaving his all of his relatives, almost all of them, some of his family came with him. He said in Genesis 15:1, and after these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your exceedingly great reward. So we know that God is the great I am. And the questions the Jews had in this time of Christ, well, who is this guy? And we're going to talk about that. I'd always thought that God was really the great I am. After working on this lesson, I am convinced that Jesus is also the great I am. In fact, he claims that himself. So we want to find out what is Jesus saying that John recorded. You know, he was very close to John. We remember that. The people were accepting him, but the Pharisees and the ranking Jews were not. We'll learn what Jesus thought and believed, and we'll also learn why the leaders rejected him so thoroughly. And as I said earlier, we're going to learn and see he's very commanding in his presentation of these statements. I almost think of Jesus and his teachings are in parables which have soft sayings, which you say, yeah, that is interesting. But in the thinking about him talking about the I am, it's not soft. It's a very, very straight to the message. So let's set the scene of when he started doing this. And Jesus had started his ministry when he was about 29, 30. He was in Capernaum, or going towards Capernaum. This is in the middle of his second year of his ministry. And it continues, this whole topic continues till the very end, the last time he met with his disciples at the Passover supper. You know, a great number of people. He was appealing to people in every way. A great number were following him. And they were following him because they saw signs and miracles, and ultimately they saw food that he was giving to them. At this point in time, before the first I am statement, he was really had finished feeding the 5,000 men, obviously a lot more than that if you include the women and children, the loaves and fishes. And, you know, I can just think, if I had been there, you know, sitting in a stadium the size of the stadium over here with all 5,000 of us looking and saying, here, what's going on down there? Here's this bucket of food or basket of food, and it seems to continue to grow and continue to be served and continue to be served. And interestingly enough, the people saw that too. And so they wanted to follow him. Interestingly enough, the disciples at this point in time, here we are, we're about 18 months into Jesus' ministry. They still were not convinced and didn't understand who this was. They knew he was a great man. They thought he was a prophet. So in John 6:14, you know, we can imagine being there, but the disciples were there. And John said that truly these men, when they had seen the sign that Jesus did, which was the miracle of creating the food, said, this is truly the prophet who came into this world. So they recognized at that point in time. Now, we also know that it was almost a year and a half later before they really did stand up and believe in the sense that they commit themselves to the rest of their lives. Also, Jesus had walked on the sea. And he was wanting to leave. He was very bothered by the crowds at that point in time. He was obviously facing many, many people, and he was decided he was going to go away. And so the disciples got in their boats and started rowing across, and they saw him walking out there. And in John 6:19, the great statement of that the disciples, when they'd rowed about 3 or 4 miles out, they saw Jesus walking on the sea and drawing near the boat, and they were afraid. But he said to them, it is I. Do not be afraid. And at that point again, the parents of the disciples saw. So we know that there's a lot of things going on here in this several hours. It may have been even a half a day. But so he went over to Capernaum, and the people came and started asking, well, where is he? He's gone. And so some of them got in their boats and followed him across the Sea of Galilee to Capernaum as well. But you know, it's very interesting. There was a lot of discussion at this point in time when Jesus saw them there and he started talking to them. And really, in John 26 and 27, it demonstrates very clearly that the people, most of them, were only interested in the food and the sideshow being the miracles that were being performed. And Jesus said, answered them and said, most assuredly I say unto you, seek me, not because you saw the signs, because you ate of the loaves and were filled. Do not labor for the food which perishes, but for food which endures everlasting life, which the Son of Man will give you, because God the Father has set his seal on him. I am the bread of life. That's what he told them. That's really the first I am. I am the bread of life. And he was trying to explain it to them. And if you read further in John, in that same chapter 6, chapter the 48th verse, it says, I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If anyone eats this bread, he will live forever. And the bread that I shall give is my flesh, which I shall give for the life of the world. At this point in time, the confusion arose among the crowd. There's a long discussion back and forth between him and some of the members of the crowd. He just fed the 5,000 several hours, maybe half a day before. He was trying to give them context so they could look back to Moses, who they regarded as their leader from times past. And Moses had led them into the wilderness, you remember. And when he did, they were going to starve to death. And then God brought the manna. And of course, there were all sorts of rules, but it was God providing the sustenance to them, which they could pick up on a daily basis, except on the Sabbath day, and they would have plenty to eat. They couldn't hold it over because it would rot. And so Jesus is comparing himself to the manna which was fed to the children in the wilderness. He's saying that they were starving spiritually, and he's talking to the audience again, and he is and was the bread of life. His demeanor is very commanding. I read this and I look and I almost duck my head. I look down and say, is that really what he's doing? He's standing there and talking to him. I am the bread of life, and you've got to come to me. So what happened? He's made this first statement. And he says, you know what happened? Well, the Jews complained he's just a local boy. Hey, we knew his mother and father. Who is this guy? We don't know him. He can't give us his flesh to eat. They totally missed the point of what he was saying. And most of his disciples walked away and heard him no more. So it wasn't exactly a positive reaction from the audience at that point in time. And so we don't know what happened for the next. There's a lot of things that went on in Jesus' life and working with his disciples. He was trying to teach them because he was going to come up to the cross and he was going to leave them. And he was trying to train them so that they would be there. And so he was about 5 months later, as best we can tell, and I'm guessing at these dates. He was on the Mount of Olives, and he walked down to the temple to teach. And the Pharisee, a classic old story, had caught a woman in adultery. And this led to the thing that we talk about today. He'd asked, who is going to cast the first stone? He told the woman to go and sin no more after no one cast the first stone. And really, I read this story and I thought about it. And you go back and look in the Old Testament, the punishment for adultery was stoning. But the ones who stoned the individual had to be without sin themselves. Go back and read. Anybody couldn't pick up stones and start throwing it at the woman who'd caught in adultery. And so by asking the question, let he who is without sin cast the first stone. Christ is going right to the basics there. And what happened? He kind of looked down and he wrote something in the sand. And after a while, he looked up and talked to the woman and said, look, you can go now. Sin no more. That particular act, go and sin no more, is incomprehensible to Jews. Absolutely incomprehensible. They had been used to taking adultery seriously and killing those who had been involved. And so all of a sudden, Jesus has got this new way of doing things. He did criticize the woman by telling her not to sin more. And after this encounter, Jesus said, I am the light of the world. I'm the light of the world. We associate light. When I get up in the morning, in the early mornings, to see the sunshine coming, it's a new day. It's a new life. And so, you know, Jesus is claiming at this point in time, I'm the life of the world. And that's what he's telling them. So what happened? The second I am. The Pharisees accused him of bearing witness to himself. That was absolutely not allowed. If you were to have a witness, you had to have somebody else. And Christ was saying, look, I am the light of the world. He theoretically could not do that if he followed the Jewish traditions. The Pharisees got so angry that they might have killed him at that point in time. Because all of a sudden they see this power start moving away from him. And so here we are, we're about 23 or so months into his ministry. And, you know, Jesus has this parable about the sheep. And he talks about the sheep in a way about, we all know what sheep are like. They have to have a shepherd. And they trust the shepherd because he takes care of them. They'll follow the shepherd. Have you ever seen a shepherd taking a sheep? As he's walking along, they're following him. They won't go away from him. And so he says, I am the door of the sheep. And what that means is that, and reading in John, the 10th chapter, Jesus said to them again, as most assuredly I say unto you, I am the door of the sheep. I am the door. Now what he's trying to tell them is, I am the way to heaven. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. That's exactly what the sheep do. He's trying to make these statements in such a way that they can understand them. The sheep also, when they hear the shepherd's voice, they come. So Jesus was wanting to tell them, look, you hear my voice. You hear what I'm teaching. Come to me. And Jesus is the access to all the spiritual children of God and the only access. And really looking at the scriptures pretty carefully, this is really the first time that he called himself the door or the path to God. Now, he was sent here by God. That is exactly what his purpose was. And so he said, I am the door of the sheep. And just following right up, I mean, this is very quickly thereafter. He said, I am the good shepherd. I'm the good shepherd. And what does the good shepherd do? The good shepherd gives his life to the sheep. Whatever happens, if the lion attacks, the shepherd goes and defends them. And we remember David talking about that. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep. And I'm known by my own. So Christ can, I am the great shepherd. To the Jews, again, God was the only shepherd. Many Old Testament references to that, God being a shepherd. And David's 23rd Psalm is a classic that we all refer back. The Lord is my shepherd and I shall not want. And continues on. Many more. But by saying, I am the good shepherd, Christ is telling them that I am God here on earth. I am the path. I'm the one who's going to take care of you. I'm going to lead you to heaven. So this is really a real strong declaration that I am God here on earth. What's the result of this again? The Jews accused him of being a demon and mad, crazy. And they took up stones and sought to seize him. Again, he's protected. They were not able to do that at this point in time. So we're still about a year away or so from the crucifixion. Lazarus had died, we see later on, and Lazarus was evidently very close, and of course, Martha, his sister. And a message had been sent to Jesus to come help us with Lazarus. They had no anticipation of what Jesus was going to do. And so Jesus, in the 11th chapter of John, says, I am the resurrection and the life, another of the great I ams. He who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live. Now, he also, in the end of that verse, he asked Martha, do you understand that? And Martha's great confession, which even today you look back and you marvel, is she understood at this point in time. She said, "Yes, Lord, I believe you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is to come into the world." She got the understanding almost uniquely, except for the very small group of people who were at the funeral and trying to be with them, while, and essentially not a celebration, but a wake. So there was a number of people in that area when Christ came. But Jesus said this to comfort her. But you know, you look back on that and you say, Jesus is the resurrection life. How much comfort does that give us? That's total and complete comfort, so we don't have to worry anymore. So Jesus went on and raised Lazarus from the dead. They did not understand. In fact, it's when he went in to see Lazarus, we remember that very short verse, Jesus wept. He was very emotional. In fact, he almost couldn't talk. There it appears in the scripture right before this. He was very moved by the fact that his friend, his Martha's brother, had passed away. So he's resurrected. And what are the results again? You've got this statement in front of the crowd there. Many of the Jews who were there believed him. And that's, I don't know how many this was, but it had to be a courtyard around a house, maybe 100, maybe 150. But immediately, the chief priests and the Sanhedrin got together to get a plan together to kill him. Now, we're still a ways away from a crucifixion, but already they're planning. We've got to get rid of this person who is really attracting the people away from us. So very close to the end, we come back 4 months later, and we realize that the disciples, and this, I think this is at the time of the supper when he's with them, and he's talking to them about trying to bring them to the conclusion that he's leaving. And he said in John 14:6, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." This is the greatest statement I personally think that Christ made during his entire ministry. I'm the way, the truth, and the life, and you come through that way to me. The supper with the disciples was over, it appears. Judas was gone at this point in time. Peter was predicted to deny Jesus, as you remember. No, I will never do that. And yet, a very short time after that, he did. Jesus was trying to get his disciples ready for his death and for his resurrection. He told them he's going to go prepare a place for him. So I'm the way, the truth, the life, and I'm going to go to get a place ready for you. He tells them he's going to come again. He's going to come again to receive them. And he also tells he's the only way to gain access to God. And you know, in our human lives, we have sin, ignorance, mortality, each one of us living on this earth for a very short period of time. Each one of us ignorant about a lot of things. Each one of us has sin. Jesus is the only answer. And that's what he's saying. I'm the way, the truth, and the life. So continuing at that same event that evening, it is at the supper or just after they were dismissed. It said Jesus really kind of called it to a halt, but they were standing around talking to him. And he said, "I'm the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. I am the vine, you are the branches. He who abides in me and I in him bears much fruit, for without me you can do nothing." I'm the true vine. That goes back in history a long time ago, and if we look back in Jeremiah, "Yet I planted you a choice vine, a completely faithful seed. Have you turned yourself before me into the degenerate shoots of a foreign wine?" And so, a foreign vine. And so, bottom line, that's historical. They knew that. They knew what a true vine was, how it grew. And so Jesus is really claiming his deity again and his relationship to the Father. He's still trying to comfort his disciples. They had picked up that he was leaving, and they were arguing about where he's going. "Can we come with you?" They're frightened and concerned about their future. He loved them, and he wants to stay there, stay with them, and he wants them to stay in love with each other, to keep taking care of each other. He wants them to keep his commandments. And so bottom line is that he also talked about converting them to friends, from servants to friends, just before he goes to the cross. 24 hours, 36 hours, I don't know how long it was. Passover may have been Thursday night, I don't remember exactly when it was. But the bottom line is, he's telling them, "You're now my friends. Servants are ones who don't know what the master wants them to do. Friends are ones who do. And so he was telling them that, trying to get them comfortable, that even though he's going, they knew what to do. And so in summary, there's a number of valedictory statements that he made to them and to us. When I say valedictory, this is kind of a summary of what he wants them to do. First of all, they've got to bear fruit and be his disciples. And he's been with them, you know, 2.5, almost 3 years. Abide in my love, same thing today. Keep his commandments. Love each other as he has loved us. He wanted his joy to be in them. Christ was not unhappy except at the cross point where he asked God if he could be relieved of this burden he was going to take on. He said, not my will, but your will. So he had joy. He knew these friends. And also, the statement, you're no longer my servants, my friends, but my friends. The Comforter is come at that point in time when he's getting relieved. He's not going to leave him alone. And that same Comforter is with us today, the Spirit that comes. I don't know how it operates in our lives, but I know he's there. I can't live our lives without it. So, in conclusion, Jesus is the great I Am. I am the bread of life. I am the light of this world. I am the door of the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. And I am the true vine. 6-7 statements that he made. There are other I Ams in that same chapter series that talk about Abraham, where they really got angry at him for talking about he knew Abraham. But these are the key ones. So Jesus claimed, and we believe today, he was God on earth. And that's what he was trying to convince those Jews, that he was God on earth, and they needed to know that. Today he sits on God's right hand. And Jesus is coming again to take his disciples and believers home with him. If you cannot help but read that, everything he talked to his disciples about, you know, preparing a place for him. I'm going to come back and get you. I'm going to send the Comforter. All that's available to us. So that's a very short summary of the I Ams of Christ, the way he talked to his disciples. If you get in and start reading carefully in the scripture and thinking about it, the command that he had there is a different person than I had known. And I am impressed that 78 years that I am still learning. I knew I was, but I hadn't appreciated how difficult he was with trying to teach them. And so the anger that he created started about a year and a half into his ministry, and it continued until it killed him. He was trying to cause a revolt in the way we dealt with God and the way we believed in God, and he did. You know, the interesting thing that Christ did is he set up a totally new way of dealing with God. We go through Christ to him, to God. It is the only way. And it's interesting to see how man has deviated from that. As we've talked tonight, we've talked about several things, but I want to offer an invitation tonight to those that might be interested in having the prayers of the congregation, or those who are here who need help, anything, or perhaps there are those who haven't been baptized. We certainly offer that. And so at this point in time, if you will stand, Mike will start leading the song as we enter into the invitation. Thank you, Mike.